Welcome, welcome to another episode of What'd You Think? With my wonderful, patient, fantastic co-host, Bobby Blakey.
Oh, me? I'm sorry. I fell asleep.
He's playing Angry Bird.
Thank you for having me, ma'am.
And our special guest this episode, Rick Gutierrez.
Yes, and tonight we're canceling the apocalypse.
All right. Well, for the time being, right today we are going to talk about Pacific Rim. We've all seen it. Probably by now you've seen it too. If you haven't seen it by now, we spoil pretty much everything. So this is your disclaimer. This is your warning. Spoilers everywhere. If you saw the previews and decided you weren't going to watch it anyway, enjoy it, and it's almost like watching it without having to spend the money.
And if you didn't go see it, you're also the blame for another sequel or remake of something else because you're not supporting new stuff coming out.
That's right. I am going to start with company. Overall, Rick, what did you think of the movie?
I loved it. Okay, I've known about this movie in title only for about 2 years now. When The Hobbit fell through for Guillermo del Toro, when his Lovecraft adaptation of In the Mountains of Madness fell through, he immediately, he said in an interview, he said that he jumped right from Mountains of Madness on Friday. By Monday, he was already starting on Pacific Rim. That's some fast turnaround. So I knew about it in title only. I remember people talking about it from Comic-Con last year because they screened a little bit of a teaser footage, and they said, we can't talk about it, but this is a movie that you don't want to miss. And I was like, okay, what is it? You know, you already had me at Del Toro. And then there was that fateful USG event where we all went to go see The Hobbit, and they screened trailer for Pacific Rim. The theater manager actually said, we're going to be showing you guys some trailers, and Pacific Rim is one of them. And this is one you don't want to go to the bathroom for. And then they show...
Mainly because they don't show trailers in the bathroom.
That's right. So they show this trailer, and lo and behold, giant fucking robots fighting giant fucking monsters directed by Guillermo del Toro. I'm like, already, I'm ass in seat. So I've been anticipating this movie for about 6 months or more. And ultimately, I mean, I was not disappointed. In fact, the more I think about it, the more excited I get for this movie because it is really, really, really good. I really loved it that much.
Well, that's excellent. Well, I'm going to turn to Bobby. And Bobby, overall, what did you think? And how do you think it compared to the lead up to it that, man, took long enough?
Well, I actually loved it. I'm kind of like Rick, probably not as far back as him, but from last year's Comic-Con, I remember watching all the interviews with Ron Perlman and Charlie Hunnam and them that were promoting it, which even before Del Toro and before knowing what it was about, being a huge fan of Sons of Anarchy, I was already sold by, you know, Charlie Hunnam and Ron Perlman being in it. So to see them and then so on top of that, giant robots and giant monsters destroying cities and just all around geeky goodness, I was sold, and I think it, you know, it had some issues here and there, but overall I thought it was awesome.
Well, I enjoyed it a whole lot. When I saw the trailers, I got real excited about it, and I was thinking that this is a giant monster versus giant robot movie, potentially done very right, because I like Del Toro. He puts together some good stuff, in my opinion. I was almost kind of turned off, though, that they started promoting it so soon, and it took forever for the movie to come out, and it got to the point where you're almost, you date somebody so long you don't want to marry them.
that's like the Hollywood thing now, is they show trailers, like, I love the trailers that you see, you know, like you see at a Comic-Con or you see once. And then you never hear about it again. And then you're like, when the hell is this movie coming out? I heard this. And then everybody thinks you're crazy because nobody else has seen the trailer. And then when it finally comes out, you're all excited again. But the new Hollywood thing seems to be flood you with these trailers 4 months in advance that really by the time it's coming out, you either don't care or you just want to go see it to get it over with.
Exactly. I mean, if they build it up too much, which I don't know. They dangerously got close to doing in my eyes. You know, you're expecting some movie where you're going to go name your children after these characters and get a tattoo because it's just so freaking wonderful. That's a pretty high bar to set. Personally, as far as a robot versus giant monster movie, I think it was exquisite. I absolutely loved it. The monsters were the most awesome, nasty, gnarly monsters. Plus, you got a variety. It was like monsters meet dinosaur. You got head explodosaurus and big shellosaurus and two headosaurus and all sorts of awesome monsters. And your giant robots were all different, and they kind of explained that away because they're models and prototypes and this, that, and the other. But the monster robot smackdowns were just absolutely fantastic. Where it kind of fell apart in my eyes was the human characters were a real disappointment for me. Because where the monsters and the robots were fantastic, the human characters were rubber stamp archetype of Japanese monster movies. What do you think about that? We'll start with Rick.
I think this is a movie at the very tail end of the credits. There's a dedication to the movie, and it's dedicated to Ray Harryhausen and Ishiro Honda. Ishiro Honda being the guy who was responsible for the Godzilla film.
Yeah.
So it's so deeply rooted in the Japanese kaiju film genre that I would expect nothing less than to have these, you know, to have the archetype characters. This is stuff that mainstream audiences have very rarely seen. I mean, this is the stuff to watch. This is great, fun stuff. And you know, I think the archetype characters, I'm willing to let that pass because these are characters that yeah, while they're archetypes, I found myself caring for them quite a bit, and it's a definite, like, just straight tribute to the Japanese kaiju films.
Yeah. What do you think, Bobby?
Well, I have, like, two sides on it, and I'm partially, it's hard for me to kind of complain, because, like, one of my issues was, like, I thought some of the acting was a bit ho-hum, mainly from Charlie Hunnam and a couple of the other characters, but at the flip side, being a Sons of Anarchy fan and knowing that he's one of those actors that I was kind of making the running joke because he's like the Ben Affleck of the day. He's this cool guy who's got this swagger to him. I don't know if anybody noticed it. He walks with this swagger. He's like that in everything. So the guy doesn't, you know, he hasn't got to the point where there's range. So I went into the movie expecting the same guy from Sons of Anarchy to be there, so I wasn't disappointed. But I can see other people seeing him and being like, God, this guy is awful. And I think the flip side of it is I think the promotions to the movie was a little off. Because like we were talking about, you know, how the big trailers and explosions and everything, and everybody's just like, what? You know, I think where they went wrong with their trailers, they should have had an evolving trailer.
Yeah.
Where it started off giving you all the punches and the monsters and the excitement, because there was way more heart in this movie than they ever tell you in the trailers. You know,
yeah,
not from a, you know, it's not by no means is it some Oscar-winning, you know,
yeah.
or a romantic film, but there's so much stuff with the characters going on, whether it was well-acted or not, that there's probably, what, a 40-minute gap there in the center where there's no action, but it's all about the history and these characters and the growth of these characters. That I think if they had started focusing on some of that more in the trailers, it would have got those people that aren't into the Godzillas and the monsters and the robots and things like that to go see the film as well.
Well, I had, I guess, the most trouble, one, with I didn't get emotionally invested in any of those people. Had any of them died, that would have been fine.
You know what? I don't think he actually, and this is just my opinion, I purposely don't think he wanted that. I think
oh, really?
He just, that's just kind of the vibe I got, you know, and again, it could be because of the acting, because I never saw those pulling your heartstring moments other than the little girl in the streets, you know, when she's having her mind flashback thing, whatever you want to call it, and you see the emotions there between the characters, but beyond that, it seemed to me like they'd say, okay, this guy's dealing with some crap, but we got to get him back to fighting, you know?
Yeah, yeah. As far as the emotional baggage that the gal has, I had a problem with the fact that she was just so darn fragile for a soldier. I mean, she's supposed to be a soldier who can kick some serious ass.
That I can actually justify. That, you know, she was sheltered. You know, after Idris Elba found her and rescued her, he sheltered her. So of course she's going to be fragile.
He taught her how to beat the shit out of somebody with a stick.
Yeah, but there's a difference between fighting and or knowing how to fight and actually fighting.
Exactly.
You can train all day long and fight, do training simulators and shoot targets, but then you get into the actual battle and 90% of people are going to freeze.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a different...
That's a good point.
Yeah, I had that same issue initially as... She was when they first started showing her, and, you know, she beat the crap out of him in the training session. But then as soon as she got to the thing, she freaks out. And I'm like, come on, move it on. And then you start thinking about it, and then you see the emotional issue she went through. It kind of brought it together. I think that was the only point to that flashback for her brain. It says, we understand why she's kind of a fragile soldier. Besides just being sheltered, she's never had to do anything she's wanted to, but she's never done it. Where I did have a problem with that is she went from being fragile to suddenly the next time they got in that thing together, she was fine.
Yes.
That I had a little bit of an issue with, but I was because they were going to fight a big monster, I quickly didn't care anymore.
and the main character who plays I guess you'd call it the Ronin character, never really stepped up and taught anybody anything that... doesn't the Ronin character usually blossom and come out and make everybody better for sharing his knowledge and wisdom? And our Ronin didn't really do that.
Well, there's a reason for that, though, because he already had the reputation. He had nothing to prove. He had nothing to sell. Everybody knew him by reputation. He was one of the top Jaeger pilots, and then when his brother gets off in the beginning of the movie, I mean, like I said, he has nothing to prove except for, you know, what am I doing here? He would have been perfectly content just staying at the wall and fixing it. So I think that might be why there is that little bit of disconnect.
What did you two think about the ever so wacky comic relief pair?
I love those guys. I actually was
I was a little afraid when you
start doing that stuff. That's a thin line. You can destroy an entire movie with those kind of characters. But I think the strangeness, and I don't know the actor's name, of the guy that was from Dark Knight Rises, that was the weird German doctor, you know, thrown together with Charlie Day.
And his
over-the-top craziness, I think worked really well because they were pivotal to the story, but they were both so kind of moronic and intelligent. Like, they almost fit what I always envisioned geniuses are, because they're socially awkward. They're either way over here, socially awkward, and don't know how to do, or they're so over the top insane and crazy, they don't pay attention to what they're doing. And I think...
I was okay with them as well, and the reason is because it shows that it's not just the Jaeger pilots who are the heroes. I mean, they weren't just there for comic relief. I mean, they had comic relief, but, you know, they weren't like Jar Jar Binks, who was there to just be stupid and attempt to be funny.
They're actually more the R2 and the 3PO.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly.
They also gave the overall, what I liked about it is them supposedly being the most intelligent people that are solving the problems and everything else are also the reason some of this stuff is now happening.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, because he...
Exactly.
Okay, what is your... If you had to pick one major nitpick, what would it be?
Not so much a nitpick, more of a bitch about Hollywood and the state of what the hell are they doing at this point. This is like one of those things where it's like, really? Okay, let me explain. They did this to John Carter. They did this to Lone Ranger. I've noticed with increasing ferocity that Hollywood and the media is getting more and more excited about the fact that a movie's going to tank and not make the money that a studio wants or needs to recoup the money that they spent on a film.
Are you saying they're becoming the producers?
Not necessarily. It's more the media saying, "Oh, look, here comes the Lone Ranger and it's gonna bomb. Oh, look, here comes Pacific Rim and it's gonna tank." You know, I mean.
I agree with you, except for John Carter. I actually do not blame the reviewers for that one. I blame Disney for that one because they advertised that movie way off.
Oh, no, this, there's way more to that story there with John Carter. But I mean, you know, especially with like with Lone Ranger and with this one, I mean, it was ridiculous just how much Hollywood was like just excited about the fact that these movies were going to tank, and they're releasing this information to the general public. This is stuff that the general public just doesn't give a shit about. And I don't understand why they're doing this when, you know, I go to a movie to enjoy it. I don't go to a movie, you know, wondering how much it's going to make, you know, in the box office. I go to fucking watch it, not to participate in the overall growth of the film. That's my big complaint there. Otherwise, you know, as far as metrics on the movie goes, I really didn't have one. I honestly didn't have one at all. I genuinely loved it that much.
Well, cool. I'm glad. And I agree with you, and will add that I fail to understand why the first weekend is supposed to make or break a film.
Because if it opens
up with a bunch of other films, and you're a parent with a child, you're going to go see, you know, Fluffy Dog 2. When it opens, because you're a parent with a child, but in your heart of heart you want to see Guns and Blood, but you're going to have to wait.
Well, a lot of that actually is the moviegoer's fault at this point, because the moviegoers have got to where they rush out to see stuff as a whole, and they've now set that tone where if everybody didn't go to the midnight showing or that Friday to show that this is going to have a strong opening, then people look at it and they're like, ooh, people didn't go to see that. Maybe I shouldn't either.
Right.
And on the reviewer side of it, coming out since he mentioned Lone Ranger, I'm going to mention it too.
Yeah.
I thought Lone Ranger was a fun movie. I had a lot of problems with it, but I thought it was overall a fun movie.
Right.
When I came out of that screening for that movie, there was a lot of people that came out and said they enjoyed it. They were laughing, they were having a good time. Yet those same people post reviews ripping apart like they did not see the same movie we saw together.
Yeah.
And there's some kind of a thing there with reviewers that I think a lot of them feel like they need to go with the masses, or they have to have a certain view so that they still have respect.
Do you think there's like a stigma for standing out and having a different opinion than everybody else?
I think they still want people to respect them as a reviewer. And if you're that guy that comes out and says, dude, I like Lone Ranger, and 50 other reviews say it was the worst movie ever made, then everybody's like, what kind of credibility does this guy have?
Right.
Yet, if you watch the ratings of movies when you come out, when the general public goes and sees, say, Pacific Rim, and the reviewers see the Pacific Rim, you get a higher rating from the viewers watching it, because they're not going for a job. They're going because they want to see the robots. They want to enjoy it. The reviewers go on and watch it. They're going to write it. They're going to toss it to the side. They're going to go sit. You're starting to get a new group of reviewers, you know, like myself and people that have been doing it kind of not as a full-time job, that while it's a job, I still review them from the fan. I try to do that, some of the artsy stuff, and review, you know, so people understand, but I look at it a little more critical than I used to, but at the same time, it's still me watching that movie.
Right.
And I'm not going to live in fantasy land and tell somebody, you know, I was talking to a guy today at a screening, and I'm like, I didn't think Lone Ranger was that bad. And he goes, that was the worst movie I've ever seen. I said, well, that's fine. I said, did you like Pacific Rim? He goes, oh, it was amazing. And I'm like, well, the guy that was sitting next to me thinks it's the worst movie ever made. And he goes, he's stupid. I'm like, why is he stupid and you're not for not liking The Lone Ranger?
Nice.
You know, and he looked at me, and I'm like, do you see my point? I said, there's a weird disconnect that, and the same goes for opinions, too. It always amazes me. Again, it was a friend of mine sitting next to me at the Pacific Rim screening. The movie ends, and I'm like, that movie was amazing. I look over at him, he goes, that is the worst movie I have ever seen. He goes, I hated everything about it. And he's like a big geeky fan guy. I was totally shocked. I mean, he was all excitable to see the movie, but I was like, you know, if there's something with your opinions that it always baffles me when especially when you get the flip side, you get a movie that everybody loves, and then you get that one guy that's like, oh, that movie's horrible, you know, and it doesn't make sense because you don't know what's going to catch somebody. And the problem is people look too much at the reviewers. They look too much at the box office instead of saying, let me just look at it myself.
Thank you. I agree completely. And as far as personal opinion, I, like I said before, I was disappointed with the the character actors, the monsters and the robots just blew my mind. They're off the charts. But I know how kind of how a movie is timed, and on the incidents where the occasions where the action paused and something random happened that was obviously supposed to be funny, the majority of the audience did laugh or did do the nervous laugh or the pause for relief from all the action laugh. I didn't, because I didn't think it was funny, but their target audience really, really enjoyed it. So I just kind of have to appreciate the fact that they didn't make this movie for me.
Well, and
but,
I think that's what I was talking about with the advertising.
Yeah.
Is because everybody went into that movie, for the most part, expecting robots and monsters fighting for 2 hours.
Right.
You know, people forget there's a story there, too, because they're not telling you, look, there's a little bit deeper story than we're telling of, we've got to survive. It loses people. You know, so you lose the geeky, nerdy people that are excited for the monster Godzilla stuff, and you're not getting the people that are like, I don't care about that stuff. You know, so it's kind of, again, it's an advertising thing that I think will lose people. You know, and like you said, you know, it just didn't catch you, and that makes total sense, but it was able to suck you back in for the fighting and the monsters.
A positive thing I'll say about it, though, is one thing that made me very, very happy is when they brought you up to speed at the beginning of the movie, they did it very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And very, very efficiently. And then you pick up from where every other monster movie leaves off. And as Rick so well pointed out, you need to be learned in monster movies. You should, if you're American. But where every monster movie leaves off, this picks up, and it picks up right in the heat of the battle. So it hit the ground running. So there's no part of the story that you've seen before a zillion times.
Right.
And for that, my hat's off.
I think what I love the most is that they wasted no time. Like, there was no moment in that movie that I was bored, shifting in my seat, looking at my watch, considering whether or not I should use the Run Pee app on my phone and see when was a good time to go to the bathroom. I was plastered to that seat the entire time, and I think there was to the testament of the filmmaker. I mean, he knows how to keep a movie going, and I was never bored. I was absolutely never bored at any point in that movie.
I think another issue in these movies, too, and you're talking about how needing the education of Godzilla and the monster movies, I think that's the other problem with the critics and with box offices. This movie was not made for everybody.
Right.
You know, Superman's not made for everybody. Lone Ranger's not made for everybody. They're made for specific target audiences. My mom and dad are not going to go see this movie. My mom thinks it's too loud. You know?
Yeah.
My dad's like, it looks all right. I'll watch it when it comes on TV. You know, and you can't gauge the box office if it's successful with the audience that it was geared towards. Now, does it need to make the money back that they spent it? Of course, it's a business thing.
Of course.
You can't look at the box office and say, oh, Pacific Rim made $35 million and it cost $150 million. Well, you take a poll of 20 people, walk past the street, and ask how many people here are Godzilla fans. You know, you're not going to get a wide variety. You'll get the people that said, oh, I remember watching those as a kid. Those are funny. That guy was stupid. He was in a suit. You have the other ones that Godzilla's awesome. And then you have the other ones that's like, oh, I don't watch foreign films. You know, you get these people, and it's like gauging these films based on their money or how good or bad it is. You can't have a guy who watches these movies who's not a fan and fairly review it.
Right. Bobby, is there a particular part of it that you really like?
I'm a big stickler for the monsters and the creatures, and I love the designs of these creatures in this movie. There was no, like you were saying earlier, there's no really rhyme or reason. They kind of gave them that prehistoric feel, but at the same time, they all look the same.
Yeah.
Well, they all look like they, you know, instead of having 35 different colors and styles and stuff, they all had like slight tweaks to the overall same design to make them individuals and memorable, but you could tell they were coming from the same place.
Right.
And each one seemed to be more unique, and they even seemed to, they escalated them with the story as well, as instead of saying, you know, because sometimes these movies, they'll give you this really badass creature at the beginning, Then the one you had standoff it to, for the final battle is just not as cool.
Uh-huh.
And here they kept making them even better and cooler and more whacked out. And besides just the visual look of them, the visual looks of their when they would, whatever you'd call it, shoot their little tentacles out that had that weird glow to them, just made them even that much
cooler. Yeah.
You know,
it gave them like it gave it even more life to them besides just a creature. It gave the danger to them more life because it's like, this feels alien.
Acid spit was just
like
awesome.
Alien. The which one?
Acid spit.
Oh, yeah. I think that one was called Leatherback from what I remember in the movie. Yeah.
The weird one with the tentacles shooting out and it's like out of its mouth looking thing, and it's just, you know, that I really dug, and I was really, I'm always hesitant when they go into the world where things come from because that's usually when a movie goes horribly wrong.
but
I really dug the design and how they went in there and they didn't stay very long in there, so they didn't still didn't tell you a lot. I was afraid they were going to go in there and explain it all and say this is why, and then you're there for an hour and you're like, ah, oh, you just ruined the mysticism of the whole thing.
Right.
But you were just in there long enough so you could beat her who we're fighting later. You know.
I think what I love with the monsters is, and Cole pointed this out as well, is that if you take a good look at the design of the monsters, every single one of those could easily be a suit and have a dude inside. And it could be, it could totally be man in suit if they wanted to. I mean, the way that these creatures look and the way that they're designed, it's obvious that they look like, that they were designed after the costumes of the kaiju films.
It's
wonderful. I mean, don't get me wrong, the scene where the fucking wings pop out of that one monster, I flipped out. I was like, what? What the fuck? What? Oh my god, what? What? And I started laughing out loud. The audience started getting into it too. It was one of those moments that I'm like, okay, this right here, I'm going to put up there with the freaking Star Destroyer at the very beginning of New Hope.
Oh, the flyover?
Yeah, that's the kind of reaction I had. I'm sure that's the kind of reaction that people had when they first saw that scene. I'm almost positive of that because I was so blown away. I was so just left completely off guard and excited. And then they bring out the sword in Gypsy Danger, and I flipped out even harder. So that's probably my favorite scene in the entire movie, the Battle of Tokyo of Hong Kong, because it was just so beautifully orchestrated. And, you know, there wasn't that wanton amount of death that there was in Man of Steel. Don't get me wrong, I loved Man of Steel. But they did something in this one that was brilliant in that they actually showed the people getting evacuated. And that was a nice, nice touch.
Yeah.
Well, you can't have a Tokyo attack without seeing a bunch of people, little Asian people running through the streets. That's mandatory.
That's
oh, yeah.
My only downside is none of them are wearing a camera. You know, speaking when you're talking about the fighting, that's another thing I love so much about this movie is the way they did the action. Is it felt like the old monster movies where they were just throwing punches. They were throwing each other around. It didn't turn into, you know, everybody had these like super speed. They moved like the size that they were, and instead of just suddenly jumping and spinning and you can't see what's going on, it's almost slow motion because they're so big, you know. And I love, like, for them to get a hard punch, he had to have the thruster on the elbow so it would punch him harder, because there's no way you're going to be able to move that thing super fast from your own body the way it was designed. So it made the action more enjoyable. I love that they didn't even care that, you know, when they're dragging the ship and they use it as a baseball bat, they didn't even care that this is dragging through the city. It's like when they're fighting, they give a rat's ass about anybody else around them because they know
I saw that boat in Gypsy Danger's hand, and I was like, shit just got real.
Well, see, the thing about it is, you know, it's like people complain about, like, the Superman stuff, people getting destroyed, people are like, why is it Superman caring about innocent lives? And in this case, you know, why are they just walking through the streets fighting? It's like the bigger picture of everything. And it's like, if you're the soldier and you're having to fight what's destroying the city, you need to stop that and not stop and try to save things, so this thing is now killing you.
Right. And
because you're the only thing that stands between it. And if that ship was in the way, I mean, it's not called cheating, it's called winning.
The ship wasn't even in the way, it was just, let me find something to hit you with.
You
can take a building and hit you with it. What would you prefer?
At the same time, though, there was a brilliant little touch, which is where you see Gypsy Danger walking down the street, and instead of, like, crashing through the overpass, it actually steps over the overpass. And I was like, bravo. That was well done, well played.
That's why I would never be allowed to drive these things, because I'd be like, move out the way. And I'd be knocking things down, and I'd be thumping people off the bridge just for the fun of it, giving like super wedgies. You know, I'd just walk over to like the bridge and sit down so I could just dangle my feet in the water. I got some personal issues to deal with. I love too that just the fact that they made everything happen in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
You know, it was like there was no need for it to be there, but that homage factor, throwing that there, because, you know, it's just kind of that cool nod that it was almost necessary, at least for the first movie, that they had to be in Hong Kong. You know, now they can, who knows if there'll be another one since it didn't kill at the box office, but, you know, now if they were to move on, we can have it anywhere and nobody will care. But I guarantee if they hadn't, everybody would be like, how can you have a movie like this and nobody in Hong Kong are fighting or blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
You do it, and they complain, why are you destroying Tokyo?
Yeah.
Because it's there.
That's right.
Well, fellas, let's start with our guest, Rick. Rate it 1 to 5, and would you recommend?
Obviously, I loved it. Okay, obviously, I love it. It's fairly oven by my fanboy ranting here. I got to say, it's one of those movies that, if it hasn't found its audience, it needs to, by word of mouth, what have you. It needs it. It's a definite recommend for me. It's a 5 out of 5. If I could notch it up to 11, I would. It's solid as hell. The effects are amazing. It's got some wow moments that, in my 36 years of watching movies, I have never seen a freaking elbow rocket, and half the shit that they pulled off in this movie, I've never seen it in a movie done ever, let alone this well. And my hat's off to Del Toro and crew. I mean, they knocked it out of the park. There's a reason why I love everything Del Toro does, and it's because it's a solid quality, and it's because he's a fanboy, and he knows what us fanboys and girls like. And this is a testament to it. So, yeah, 5 out of 5, definitely.
Excellent, excellent. Bobby, what do you say?
Well, first of all, I see elbow rockets on Thursdays. So, I live in a different world than you guys do, but some of it's because I have delusions from being hit in the head so many times. I'm actually going a little bit different route. I'm probably doing more of a 4. Okay. I love the movie. I do think some of the acting was a little but I think it's enough to where you really won't care in the bigger scheme of things. But at the same time, I think I'm with Rick. I hope it finds an audience, but I also know that there's only a certain audience that's going to go see it right now. But I hope that it's going to be one that when it hits video, word of mouth is going to be the thing that says, dude, you got to watch this. You don't have to be a fan of those to enjoy this film just for the spectacle that it is, in a good way.
I want this to be the sleeper hit of the summer. I want people to be like,
it's definitely something that should be and needs to be seen on a big screen, because it's that big of a scope. But if not, if people aren't going to spend their money to go see something they're not sure about because they're not fans, I hope they'll shell out that money to see it when it hits Blu-ray and DVD and, you know, 3D Blu-ray, DVD, whatever, and give it that chance when they only have to pay a little bit for it, and realize that they made that mistake, in hopes that we can see it's more of it in the future. And hopefully that'll push the Godzilla movie that's coming to be even better, and maybe this will be a new trend to bring it back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm giving it 3.5 stars. I'd give it 4 if character's development was just a little bit better. But that being said, I'm convinced that it's going to become a cult classic. I'm convinced that if anything is made into toys, it's going to be those monsters and those robots. And I think that it's definitely, at the very least, when it comes out on DVD, you should see it. It's a fun monsters versus robots movie.
I'll ask one more thing. Those people that don't go to the movies that often and that are kind of confused about when movies come out to DVD and stuff, there's a movie called Atlantic Rim. It is not the same thing.
Ooh.
No, it is not. It is not.
It's awesome, but it is an asylum film. It is not Pacific Rim. And it's not Sharknado either.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. And Bobby Blakey, thank you so much for now. I don't know if we mentioned it before, but Bobby's generously agreed to be my permanent co-host because he knows so much about films and film reviewing and the like, and I really do appreciate it, and we hope to record many more of these shortly after the opening weekend so we can share our opinion because I know that's so important to you.
And I am contractually obligated to say they did not force me to do this. I am doing this on my own free will.
Oh, nice. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, Rick, before we thank you for a final time and let you go, where can you be found, sir?
Okay, well, you can find me at, and Catherine, and Cole, and occasionally Bobby. We need to have you more on the show, Bobby. It's United States of Geekdom. That's our website. It's UnitedStatesOfGeekdom.com. We're on Facebook under United We Geek. We're on Twitter under Join the USG. And you can also check out my Disney side project, which is called Rediscovering the Magic. We're about to, as of this recording, we're about to start a series on the Disney Afternoon. And also a look at the Walt Disney Family Museum. That's on Facebook under Rediscovering the Magic with Rick and Friends. And on Twitter under Fantasticast.
Wow, you really should get more involved, Rick.
I was like, what do you think? There's one day
out of the week you're not doing something. Well, Bobby, where can we appreciate your work?
Well, nobody appreciates any of my work, but you can find me. you can find me at my house most days. You can also find me at the Relic.
We'll be posting that online.
That's right. You can find me at the Relic. Relic Community Center, teaching small children to hurt each other, as well as Dallas Examiner. You can go to examiner.com. Just look at my name, Bobby Blakey, for all my TV, movies, comics, martial arts content, as well as my own website, laststopcomic.com, which right now the only thing new that I'm posting are reviews, but each review has a special cartoon original artwork with it. And I do some stuff, as mentioned, on the Jedi Cole universe, especially with the collaboration cartoons of You Are Here with Cole's writings and my sad artwork that somehow people enjoy nonetheless. And beyond that, I'm really just around annoying people.
Well,
I'm sorry I don't do as much as Rick does, okay?
Well, who does? Well, thank you so much, gentlemen. And the next time a movie comes out that I think is worth watching, we'll be reviewing it on What'd You Think?